years ago on a cold, dark night. Someone was killed neath the town hall lights. There were few at the scene, but they all agreed that the slayer who ran looked a lot like me. Now she walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. The scaffold was high, eternity near. She stood in the crowd and shed not a tear. But sometimes at night, when the cold wind moans in a long black veil, she cries o'er my bone. Now she walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. The judge said, son, what is your alibi? If you were somewhere else, then you won't have to die. I spoke not a word, though it meant my life. I'd been in the arms of my best friend's wife. Now she walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me.
Straight, I know what's the evil in the hearts of men. And man, there's a lot of it, I'll tell you that. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker on Freya's Day, Ladies' Day in the bunker. Yeah, that's why we put up that Johnny Cash song, Long Black Dress. Yeah, I like that song. I sing it once in a while myself. That guy got screwed. Hey, it's May the 2nd, 2014. And we've got a working on a new moon here. That's right. Pretty nice outside, except we had some rain, and it's still wet out there, and no sun. But supposed to be getting up to the 70s and 80s by the end of next week. And I got my Got my trunks all ready to go. Jump in that creek with my old inner tube around me and float down through the golf course and wave at all the ladies down there playing golf. They like that. Well, I guess Albamo is not back from his tour of trying to play big shot that we're going to surround China and keep them occupied. First, he jumps into the Ukrainian thing. It looks like that's being ironed out by the people, you know, with rocks and stones and maybe once in a while a shot here or there. But, yeah, they're going to move all that fleet stuff over there to Asia now. And it looks like they're going to try to get all the minor players together to surround China. You see, that just shows you how insane this system is. And it's been that way for a long time because it's so greedy to bring in the money that it changes on a whim. And so, you know, they were pretty peaceful with the Chinese. And now they've decided, oh, my goodness, we got to have a new big enemy, so we'll make it China. So we'll get Vietnam, those hillbillies, and Cambodia, those hillbillies, all those little countries, and we'll make them CETO. They can't make them NATO. They used to have a Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. Now they got the TPP they're trying to get gone. And most of those countries like Japan are not going to buy into that because they got nothing to gain from TPP. And once they get that TPP in there, we're all going to be screwed. Even more screwed. If you weren't screwed before, you're going to be screwed now. So anyhow, that's the TPP. If you haven't heard about it, you better get up on the internet and read about it because it gives foreign countries entrance into the United States courts against you. Mm-hmm. And it gives the American corporations openings to go into other countries and in the courts and rob those people. It's going to be international total robbery, debauchery, and a whole bit. That's right. I don't know. These guys are playing with fire, man. Playing with fire. This runaway capitalism, this predatory capitalism, has made a pariah out of our country. That we're, our country now is hated universally all over the world. And they've got a good reason for it. And now, look at what's happening in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, they had a bumper crop of cocaine, or what do they call that stuff? I don't know. But anyhow, they had a bumper crop of it that they used to make heroin. And that couldn't happen without the support and involvement of the United States Uncle Sam helping them with that, yeah. But this fear of China, I think, is a little misplaced because China has got big, big problems. I mean, they've got labor problems up the kazoo, and now they got people demonstrating and raising hell in the streets. What the hell did they got a nickname for the ruling class over there now in the Communist Party? Some Communist Party. Yeah, they got a... I forget the name of it. I just heard it last night, too. Maybe I'll remember it while I'm doing the show. It's a derogatory name for the ruling class boys that are really screwing the Chinese. They've toxified almost all the water in China. I mean, you've got maybe 75% of the water in China you can't drink. Yeah. So it's, and the disease and everything is growing like mad, so the capitalists exported all our industry over there without any guidelines, without China having any guidelines on it, environmentally or health-wise or anything. So they just let it run for the last, 20 years? And it's destroyed the country. So how is a country like that going to mount a major military adventure on anybody? I don't think so. I don't think so. Of course, they're telling you now that our recession is getting better. It's not getting better. We're not climbing out of this recession. It's like the Depression in 29. The only thing that got us out of the Depression in 29 was getting us into the war in Europe and enticing the Japanese to attack us. That's the only way we got out of the Depression. It's not that easy to get out of a severe depression or recession. Now, we got out of recession back in several years ago, but this is a different kind. And also, we got two bubbles going on. So it's not going to be the same. And today they're coming out with, we got more people working and all that kind of stuff, which is mostly nonsense. And it's all minimum wage, and those cheap-ass Republicans don't want to give the workers even, you know, take it up to $10.50 or 11 or 12. They are out in Seattle, I understand, they're getting $15 for that kind of work. So that's good. But the problem here is the corporations can turn around and they just raise the prices on stuff. The only way to do it really is to tax the ruling class much heavier than when they're being taxed now, and stop all their ability to ship their money out of the country too. They're not being touched at all. So at some point they may say, we'll give the workers $10.50 an hour. But then they'll turn right around and raise the price of the product. And then they're claiming all these people are going to lose their jobs because they give them a higher minimum wage. That's ridiculous. It's only because the big boys do not want to share. They do not want to share at all. The homeowner numbers in this country have dropped to a point that they haven't been in 19 years. Home ownership has dropped that much. That's something they don't want to tell you. Consumer spending for durable goods has dropped 3%, and that's just in the last 2 or 3 months. So things are not getting better as far as people purchasing things. They don't have the money. They don't have the purchasing power. How could they? Now, big stores are closing their doors at a faster rate than we've seen since the Lehman Brothers bankers collapsed. I mean, here in the town that I'm in, Penny's just closed up, and there's some other big ones around here that have closed up. So, Mr. Obama and you Republicans, is that getting any better? Or are you Republicans rejoicing because you don't care as long as you win the next election? Is that it? Malls and mega stores are closing up like mad all over the country, some places worse than others. Now, for all those people out there who thought that Obama, this mulatto, was going to help the Negroes, why, he's hurt the Negroes worse than anybody. I mean, this economy is crushing the Negroes. And the black crime rate is going through the roof again, thanks to the black Ku Klux Klan. But you know what? If Obama could run again, he'd still get 85% of the black vote. You see, they're voting racially. And I got to give them credit for that. The trouble is, they don't understand the mulatto is the new Jewish race of people. That they've been experimenting with that for a long time. Now it's going full bore, the mulattoes. And they've never been the real great friend of the black man. A lot of people don't seem to realize that you look down through history, and since the mulattoes have a certain amount of white blood, some of them have quite a bit of white blood, they don't want to be classed with the true black man. Yeah, I just watched there's a hell of a series on TV now. I get them after they've played the season before, called, Come on, Tom. Yeah, it's called Hell on Wheels. It's one of the best Western series I've seen in years. It's really good. But all the symbolism is there. They've got the white workers, of course, and the Irish, and their differences with some of the English types. And you've got the black guys, the Gandhi dancers, working on the railroad. And then you've got a couple of mulattoes, and one of them has been put in charge of somewhat security. And the black boys don't trust him, and they shouldn't trust him, because he does feel he's above them. There's a lot of symbolism in this series, Hell on Wheels, about building the railroad going west. Reminds me of that movie, Once Upon a Time in the West. But this is a little bit more interpersonal than that one. And if you haven't seen it, you can rent it at a video store, or you can watch it, I think, on live TV, but I think it's on a pay channel. But these mulattoes, they pull a rug out from under their black brethren very easily. And you see, that's exactly what Obama has done to his so-called people. They're not his people, because he's a new race. The mulattoes, a new race. And they're using it quite well. The Jews are really using this mulatto thing. They've got all these coffee-colored black women that have, you know, trim bodies and look pretty damn good. They don't have all the Negro features. But they're Negroid blood in them. I mean, you know. And they're pushing them into all the ads, pushing them on the news, newscasters, weathercasters. Incidentally, whatever happened to all those white people that worked in advertising? You don't hardly see any of them anymore. All your ads now, all your television ads, almost all of them are with blacks. Or white guy with black woman, a white guy, and all that kind of stuff. So, anyhow, that is the very very latest in Jew weaponry, is the mulattoes. And it's very effective, because these, you know, a good share of the white boys out there, they'll lay down with about anything. And if it looks halfway decent, they're going to lay with it. So in some ways, maybe we have more in common with the black man than we do with these other people. Yeah. I was thinking the other day, who was the worst race trader that ever lived in North America? And I thought about it. Well, that was the man who bought the first slave off the slave ship coming in from Africa. The very first purchase of a slave off the slave ship. That white man was the worst white man that ever lived. Well, labor statistics say that 20% of the families in the United States don't have anybody in their family that's employed. None of them have a job. That's 20% of the working families in this country. None of the people in the family have a job. What do you think about that? Of course, some of you people that I'm talking to may be in that situation. Now, I'm saying that means completely unemployed. 20% of the working families, everybody in the family is completely unemployed. They're not working part-time or anything. They have no job at all. And we've got 1.5 million less jobs than when the recession in 2007 started. I mean, you know, yeah. And the quality of the jobs that have been so-called created, mostly artificial government jobs, come nowhere near the quality of the jobs that were lost. Men who work full-time today earn 40% less than they did 40 years ago. But let me get that straight there. Now, men who work full-time today make less than the men did 40 years ago. And that's adjusting for inflation and all that good stuff. Well, 62% of the working people in the United States make less than $22. $22 an hour. How about that? Actually, $20 an hour. How are they going to expect you to buy houses and things like that? How are they going to do that? How are you going to buy houses and new cars when you're making less, or most of the country's making less than $20 an hour? I hear guys call in on the radio that are, you know, middle-aged men, professionals, whether they be truck drivers or what, they're working for $15 an hour. Now, most of those people don't make $20 an hour. Most of them make a lot less than $20 an hour. But all of them make less than $20 an hour. Well, 9 of the top 10 jobs in the United States make less than $35,000 a year. Wow. And 40% of all Americans could not come up with $2,000 at this time. Now, $2,000 is a, you know, it's a significant amount of money, but it's not insurmountable as it, you know, like it used to be. People come up with a couple of grand, but most of them couldn't do it today.
Now, number 12.
Now, that's for a major emergency. They couldn't come up with $2,000. Now, I told you a long time ago that if you could not live for 1 year on your savings without working, without an income, then you're no longer middle class. So, essentially, there is no middle class anymore. You check around, there are not many people that could go a year without an income, living off their savings. No way. So we're faced with we've got the super poor and we've got the super rich. And most people, I guess, are maybe at the top of the poor thing, but sinking fast. But the rich are moving out and making more and more money. What do you think's going to happen? Well, I don't know. We'll wait and see. 56% of all Americans have subprime credit. And we know what happened to that deal the last time round. And according to studies, there's 49 million Americans now are dealing with food insecurity. In other words, they're not quite sure when they're going to run out of food or whether they're going to get some more. 10 years ago, the women that outnumbered the women with jobs outnumbered women on food stamps 2-1. Now it's the opposite, way over the opposite. Don't give me that stuff. It's all blacks. There's millions of white people in a hell of a mess. 70% of the national budget is going to entitlements or welfare payments. 70% of the U.S. budget. I guess the rest goes to the military-industrial complex. And the people receiving welfare and so forth, exceed the people who are working and have jobs by 60 million people. 60 million. More than the people who actually have a job are getting food stamps and welfare. Well, while profits of the rich and the ruling class are going through the roof, real estate in the Hamptons up there in New York is doubling and tripling. They never had it so good, the top 1, 2, 3%. Yeah, everything's going through the roof, I'm telling you, for the wealthy. Well, I sent out some stuff on this Adelson character, this, as Wall Street would call him, Kike Ju, from Las Vegas, but really he makes much more money in Macau over there next to China. And now, as the stuff I sent you out yesterday, one of his next in command is, they got a grand jury on him getting ready to arrest him, allegedly. And they were concerned about that Adelson, if they indict him, he may head for Israel. I don't think they will indict him because he controls billions and billions and billions of dollars. I watched a documentary on this bird last night. It's on the it's on Hulu. You can probably get it other things too. If you're probably on someplace else too, just put his name in there. But anyhow, 80,000 people a day coming from mainland China and all over the place to his big casino in Macau. 80,000 a day. These poor bastard Chinese over there that have hardly anything, they got this get-rich-quick idea like a lot of people do in this country, the same people that blow all their money in Vegas and so forth. And they'll do anything. They'll borrow money or anything, every little villager, to get down there to Macau and think they're going to make their fortune. So not only is the commie capitalist government of China screwing the people of China, but here we have Adelson, the Jew, the kike, comes in there, builds one of the biggest gambling halls in the world, and he pays off the Chinese commie capitalist government 30-40% off the top for the ability to operate and carry on his so-called business, which is nothing, but it's the lowest business probably in the world because it tends to promise people things that they'll never get. And it deals with the very lowest problems that humans have. And this is a poor little Jew boy that worked himself up from, I think it was either New York or Ohio someplace, started out selling newspapers. Well, I started out selling newspapers, and I don't own any gambling casino in Macau. Anyhow, that's the word there of... Now, this Jew, Adelson, is the one who's been courting all these right-wing conservative politicians. And he had a big meeting there in Vegas, and they all came here a few weeks ago. I told you about it. They're all kissing his ass and sucking up to him and getting down on their knees. What's funny is all these right-wing Christian leaders, like that fat boy from, where was he from? Kansas and Missouri that was governor, and he let a nigger out of jail and pardoned him and out of the goodness of his Christian heart, and the nigger went right out and murdered another woman, the one he ran for president. Now he's got a TV show. These guys have no shame whatsoever. But anyhow, they're all following this ugly kike around, hoping to get some money to run for president so they can serve his interests some more. So it's going to be interesting to see whether the U.S. attorney really tries to put an indictment on him. I don't think they will. I don't think they dare to do it. Anyhow, you know how the ruling class is living there in Manhattan, up there in those high-rises, with beautiful views and living better than the kings and queens of Europe ever did. And those beautiful apartments are going from anywhere from 12 to 50 million. Yeah, it's nice work if you can get it, or nice not work if you can get it. And the interesting thing about it is there's waiting lists of people, multimillionaires, lined up to gobble up these apartments there in the high-rises of Manhattan. Where's King Kong when you need him? We need King Kong to climb up those damn buildings and reach through the window and grab these people and drag them out. Yeah. Yeah, up there in Manhattan with all those high-speed traders that they've got it rigged now, where if they get their bet in a nanosecond before the next guy, well, he cleans up. Hey, it's Friday. Let's tune in old Kaiser and see what he's got to say about these bastards. And you know, I think I'm going to run his whole half-hour show today because the guest is from China Report, and he's got a hell of a lot of interesting information on China. So let's go.
Welcome to the Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. Can World War 3.0 save us from Great Depression 2.0? Stacy?
Now, speaking of Great Depression, we're seeing the signs of it across America. Despite all the financial news in America only reporting on the positive stuff, what you really see across America is the things that you also saw during the first Great Depression, which is like the illegalization, the criminalization of homelessness, for example. So I want to turn back to what Ben Bernanke said before he became Fed Reserve Chairman. And this is a speech to the FRB in 2004 called Money, Gold, and the Great Depression. He wrote, other features of the 1929-1933 decline included a sharp deflation. The economy improved after Franklin D. Roosevelt's inauguration in March 1933, but unemployment remained in the double digits for the rest of the decade, full recovery arriving only with the advent of World War II.
Yeah, well, interesting bits there, because remember back in the 20s and 30s, you had the stock market bubble of the 20s, followed by the bust, followed by the depression. What's different about this era is that you've got the depression and the stock market bubble happening concurrently, simultaneously. That's the genius of financial engineering and the apartheid interest rate wall, which has allowed for a depression to go on in much of America and in much of the UK and around the world, while the asset holders are making incredible bubble-like mega gazillions based on the appreciation of those assets, which they can then use as collateral. I see in the UK, for example, a new bank has just opened up where the top 1% of the top 1% can pledge yachts and Monets and fine jewelry to get a loan as a pawn shop for gazillionaires, because they can't get the kind of money they want at the bank because it's all tied up in these assets.
Now, we see across Europe double-digit unemployment rates. In America, if they actually counted all the unemployed, they would also have high double-digit unemployment rates. So not only do we have all across the Middle East in a war, now also war starting in Europe, but Obama has now made his Asia pivot. And we know that by 2020, they're expected to have two-thirds of all U.S. naval fleets will be in Asia. For humanitarian purposes, they say. Well, a tweet from BBC, U.S. President Barack Obama assures Japan disputed islands covered by bilateral defense treaty. So there he is in Japan last week, and he was trying to basically saber-rattle. He was trying to cause saber-rattling over these uninhabited islands, an uninhabited island out in the middle of the East China Sea.
Here comes out of lunch, I think, down the canal. I can hear the barge now. Yeah, make mine a chicken salad sandwich. Anyway, the Asia pivot is what? The sequel to the failed War on Terror? Is that, I mean, is that he's pivoting from the War on Terror, which was a hoax to begin with. It's just a way to make a lot of people a lot of money for no particular reason. To now he's pivoting to Asia and the Ukraine. I mean, is that what it's all about? I mean, is that what he's pivoting from?
Well, from the analysis I've read in the mainstream media here, what they consider pro-American, they think this is a good thing because they say America is a declining empire and all of the power and wealth is moving to the east. So it makes sense for the America to go there to secure those assets over there. For those people, of course. It's just a humanitarian mission. All the unemployed Americans are just sending their military over there just to help those people. It's not to secure any sort of, you know, trade deal.
Well, is this a repeat of the British strategy, which we all finally remember now as the Opium Wars? I mean, I remember Obama was an avid pot smoker in college. You know, those great photos of him getting huffing down on a big spliff. I mean, is he figuring, you know, is this his Asia pivot strategy to get China hooked on opium again, except he's going to get them hooked on what? Cheap credit, cheap quantitative easing? What's he going to sell Asia in return for all the money that they're sitting on that they took from selling crap at Walmart? What's his Asia pivot? How's he going to convince China to, is this it? Opium War 2.0?
I think it's the Asia pivot on the one hand is to contain China, not to help China in any way. It's to contain China. We already have our puppets like Japan and Malaysia and Indonesia and all those sort of people that will give us what we want. But here they want to contain China. That's what a lot of policy by the U.S. is to contain China, to make sure they don't rival, that there's never any rival that can emerge to compete with the U.S. But there is also the other issue is this TPP, which is a Trans-Pacific Partnership, which a lot of the nations that are supposed to sign this, the 12 Asian nations and Pacific region nations, so Chile, from Chile to Japan to Malaysia to Vietnam, they're all like supposed to sign this deal, right, with the United States. Here's some of the, they're reluctant to sign it there. So America's proposed TPP, buyer beware. Despite all of Obama's charm, the rosiest projections say that the TPP will raise incomes among the parties to the treaty by a mere 0.3% of GDP in 2025. Mm-hmm. So all these people that they're trying to convince to sign this deal, even with their own rosy projections, it's only going to increase their GDP by 0.3%. Now, that made me think of another story in the news in the past week that we've covered, this decline of the American middle class versus Canada and Europe. In this tweet, it shows increase in median income since 2000, Britain up 20%, Canada up 20%, U.S. up 0.3%, the same number. So they're trying to make everybody American where you're only going to increase by 0.3%. All that other 20% that would have been shared amongst the population goes to the favored corporations in this TPP deal, the financial services organizations in particular, and Hollywood and copyright industry.
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, but the idea of containing China at this point, after you open the Pandora's box of China with the World Trade Organization entry, during Clinton years, now they're going to do an about-face and say, no, we're shutting that door, and we're going to open the door here for these Asian countries that we like Japan, that, oh, by the way, is a huge buyer of our U.S. government bonds. China's a seller of our U.S. government bonds. China's talking to Russia and Iran. We don't like that because we want to be over there near Fukushima getting as much radioactive sushi as we possibly can. It doesn't make any sense, of course, not that it would ever think it would.
Well, speaking of radioactive sushi, what has destroyed the global economy is radioactive weapons of mass financial destruction, as Warren Buffett called them. So these are the things that they're going to be forced to take. And this is part of the reason, in fact, the largest reason why these nations don't want to sign the deal at the moment is that they will have no control. They will have to take Jamie Dimon's weapons of mass financial destruction, and they can do nothing to contain it. So should the Fukushima of Jamie Dimon's derivatives meltdown, they cannot build any barrier around it. They cannot try to stop it, the toxins from leaking out. This is what the deal would do to them. They would not be able to stop it.
Okay, so to put this into historical context, you have the 2008 financial blow-up, and there was no reform. There was only a doubling down that the banks would, in fact, increase their amount of derivatives around the world to try to support the zombie banks like J.P. Dimon and his J.P. Morgan Bank. And then a few years later, when they ran out of suckers, they introducing the TPP to go to countries around Asia and say, look, as part of doing trade with you, and we're going to protect you against, you know, China, there's now the enemy, yesterday was the good guys. But you have the quid pro quo is you got to take all of our terrible derivatives.
Yes.
If you got to take all of our Hollywood movies at onerous copyright laws that go against free speech and go against the Constitution, and that's the deal. And because in no way are we ever going to reform the banks from ever staying within their means and doing business in a way that's not outside of all known practices, good practices as it relates to banking, because the banks have a gun to our head. I'm appeasing the banks. I'm an idiot. I'm Barack Obama. Join me in my quest to be irrelevant.
Well, this is yes, that's what I'm saying, is that they're stoking war between Japan and China in order so that the U.S. says, Japan, you won't sign this deal. You're protectionist. Sign our deal. Otherwise, you're going to go to war with China. Look at what happened in the Ukraine. Remember, Yanukovych, the elected president, was debating whether or not to sign this EU deal or go to a Eurasian economic area, what deal to sign. And when he started to move towards this Eurasian deal, war breaks out. So it's like either sign the trade deal or war happens. That's how this empire runs.
You know, it's amazing, talking about pivots, it's amazing, or linchpins, it's amazing how Scarlett Johansson seems to fit into the geopolitical reality that we are all subject to be involved with, because not only is Hollywood protecting images of Scarlett Johansson naked, and that's why they totally override the Constitution. That's why they totally introduce draconian copyright laws. It's because the Hollywood industry, as exemplified by the leak of those photos, where the guy who leaked those photos was like thrown into a dungeon for 20 years, because the copyright law is sacrosanct, and all idea of sharing information is considered evil. You know, David Frum, the speechwriter under Reagan, would call it the evil copyright abusers or something like that. Simultaneously, she's involved in that SodaStream ad, which it plays into the whole Palestinian, Middle Eastern, Israeli fuckuffle, or fuckuffle. No, what am I saying? I'm saying, trying to say kerfuffle. Yeah, kerfuffle. Not falafel. I got the falafel and kerfuffle mixed up. Maybe that could be a new cuisine up here on the high street. Kerfuffle-fuffle.
So going back to this TPP deal and the Asia pivot, so finally on this, what is really happening with Obama in Asia. As Obama visits TPP countries, new Obama administration report targets their public interest policies as trade barriers to be eliminated. So a 2014 National Trade Estimate report published earlier this month by the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative, the USTR, says the policies of other TPP nations criticized by the 384-page USTR report include New Zealand's popular health programs to control medicine costs, an Australian law to prevent the offshoring of consumers' private health data, Japan's pricing system that reduces the cost of medical devices, Vietnam's post-crisis regulations requiring banks to hold adequate capital, Peru's policies favoring generic versions of expensive biologic medicines, Canada's patent standards requiring that a medicine's utility should be demonstrated in order to obtain monopoly patent rights, and Mexico's sugary beverage tax and junk food tax. So they're not allowing them to have any public interest, domestic, public, national interest, though they hail, like, democracy. Give those people the vote. They could vote, but they're actually getting no rights. In fact, in Malaysia and Brunei, for example, they're going to try to force them to accept imports of alcohol, even though they're majority Muslim and they don't want alcohol in their country. They're like, well, too bad, you signed this deal.
Right. Again, we've talked about on the show that the corporate lobbyist efforts for TPP is a law that is riding above all sovereign laws of all nations. Doesn't matter what your religion is, doesn't matter what your country is, doesn't matter what your flag or president is. This new corporate law that protects copyright is now your new reality, and we're backing it up with the Pentagon. And the other side of the copyright cartel is something called the public domain. The public domain is what's being destroyed with these incorporation of all we hold dear, land, air, freedom of speech, freedom of thought. It's all being cooperatized, corporatized, financialized. Well, we got to go.
We got to go. See you later, Max.
All right. For the Kaiser Report, I'm Max Kaiser. Time now to go to Shanghai and speak with Dan Collins of the ChinaMoneyReport.com. Dan, welcome back to the Kaiser Report.
Thanks, Max. Good to be back.
All right, Dan, the Asia pivot. How is Obama's pivot being portrayed in the local media? And I want to know, what is a pivot? As a war threat, a good times, what's going on?
Yeah, the so-called Asian pivot over here in China, they really refer to it as the China containment strategy from the Obama administration. It's basically a new policy put in place going back to about 2005, by American military planners, basically to try to encircle China. They've signed new agreements with the Philippines. We have now access to Philippine bases we haven't had in decades. We're stationing troops in Darwin, Australia. We've got 1,000 there now. We're heading up to 2,500. We're trying to talk to the Vietnam and Malaysia. We're trying to basically create a group of allies around the Asia-Pacific region to try to bottle up and contain China. We call it the Asia Pivot Strategy. Military planners are on record about talking about putting 60% of our naval assets in Asia-Pacific. 60% of our Air Force bases outside the United States will be in Asia-Pacific. So basically the military planners now, after 12 years of fruitless wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, are kind of sensing the end of the so-called war on terror, and they're looking for the next cash cow, which is going to be China, because they finally have a credible superpower with which to justify military budgets for.
Right. This is kind of the point I made in the first half of the show, that the end of the war on terror is over. It's been proven to be a hoax for the most part. It was a huge black hole of money. It consumed trillions of dollars. It made a lot of people rich. It impoverished the country. And then the funny thing about this China pivot, though, is that it wasn't under Clinton and the World Trade Organization. They want China in. They want them under the tent. They want them in that. They're buddies now. So within just this short period of time, the U.S. is saying, no, you're not our friend. We don't want to be with you anymore. We want the Vietnamese. We want these other people. I mean, is it that callous? Is it that ridiculously obtuse? Is it insane? It appears insane to me. The people in China, what do they make of this? What do they make of Obama's strategy? To me, it seems insane. What do they think?
Well, it's just, I guess, after decades of American foreign policy being so bizarre, it's almost par for the course. You're absolutely right on the disconnect. I mean, American business leaders and the Pentagon planners are now totally opposite of what they think about China. You know, General Motors sells more cars in China than they do the United States. You know, 30-40% of corporate profits for American multinationals in one way come from China, either selling into China or manufacturing out of China. So it's absolutely a bizarre situation to side with some of these countries like Vietnam, who we had a war with, or Japan and Korea that have totally blocked access to any American products. And we're going to side with them now and try to go after China. And it really is just the next cash cow to justify, $700-800 billion military budgets.
Now, I think when Obama leaves office and they go in there, they're going to find a meth lab. Because he's like a guy who's on meth. He's tweaking all the time. He just can't. He goes from. He's just trying to ransack the neighborhood for who knows what. The guy's insane. Now, at the same time that Obama is trying to strong arm Japan and South Korea into signing this Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, of course, which is very friendly to U.S. corporations, gives U.S. corporations of rights above and beyond the sovereignty of any of these countries. Do these countries like South Korea and Japan know that they're signing a deal that lets American corporations sue them if they feel that they're getting in the way of American corporations? Dan?
Yeah, well, the TPP, as you mentioned, is really the economic arm of the Asian pivot strategy, and it's basically done to exclude China. If you look at who's involved in TPP, it's everyone around China except China. So China's obviously quite upset with it. But in terms of Japan and South Korea, they already have 0% duty access to U.S. markets. And as I mentioned, Japan won't buy South Korean products. South Korea won't buy Japanese products. Neither one of them want to buy American products. So I don't see them signing any. I don't see them signing the agreement and handing over sovereignty to U.S. corporations.
All right, Dan. It seems as though America wants to push China into the arms of Russia and Iran to strengthen that Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which has been really this new trade zone outside of the U.S. dollar. So is this just pushing China into the arms of Russia and Iran even more? And isn't that strategically a huge blunder?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seems like we're reliving the 1930s where we're getting entangled in alliances and setting up blocks against other blocks. And, Russia and China, absolutely, in the last 5 to 7 years, has been working together. Russian oil is now priced in RMB to China. Chinese renminbi is now carried as reserves all across the world. They are forcing the internationalization of the renminbi, and they're forcing the both countries to work together as a counterweight to the United States, which is really out of control on foreign policy.
All right, Dan, let's talk about the Chinese economy and their currency, which, of course, a lot of people were thinking that the currency was going to rise. It's now back to falling, and there's a lot of questions about GDP in China slowing down. The official numbers have it slowing down. The unofficial numbers have it slowing down even more. What's going on there?
The Chinese GDP is up 25 times since 1980, you know, up from $357 billion to $9.4 trillion last year. With that being said, we probably have very little to any real economic growth in the last couple years. China has had to clamp down on many areas of the economy. You can't buy a second home. You have to get a quota to buy a car now. These kind of things to try to clamp down on inflation, which was unofficially at 8, 9, 10% for the last several years. So China, economically, it's muddling through. It's trying to rebalance its economy. Massive debt problems exist with local governments and some local sectors such as renewable energies and steel. Massive debts in the steel sector. Basically, anywhere where the government has gotten involved and tried to do central planning still, they've created massive areas of problems for the economy. So I see them as continuing to muddle through. They'll continue to try to rebalance. At the end of the day, they have massive currency reserves. You know, half the homes here have been paid for in cash. 90% of the cars are still paid for in cash here. So I see them finally getting through it. The good news for them is, unlike the United States, the economy is based on real productive activity, whereas opposed to the United States is just purely government spending and credit and debt.
All right, now, Dan, here's an interesting story. Most of China's billionaires are either senior party leaders or related to senior party leaders, but they're now committing suicide at a faster rate than senior bankers, even in the West. You know, in the West, we hear about all these bankers committing suicide. I think officially there's 14 of these suicide bankers, and there's a few more kind of related. But in China, apparently, there's a whole much worse rash of suicides amongst senior party officials. What's going on there, Dan?
Well, Max, we can top you over here. We have 54 officials now that have been reportedly have been suicided or drank themselves to death. And that's just in the last year, 12 months. So what's going on is basically a political purge, and it's using corruption as a tool to get rid of some of the political enemies of the current administration. So what happened when Xi Jinping, the current premier, came into power? He promised to go after the tigers and the flies. The flies being low-level bureaucrats that are stealing tens of thousands to a few million, and then the tigers, which are guys right up at the top of the economy and top of the government. We saw last year Mayor of Chongqing, Bo Xilai, indicated in the death of British businessmen, sentenced to life in prison, and they confiscated over $1 billion of his assets. He was top 25 government official in China. Recent breaking news, which is really interesting, is Zhang Yongkang, standing party member, iron-jawed, iron-faced guy, Minister of Public Security, top nine public official in China, has disappeared. 300 of his family's relatives, associates, have been questioned or detained, and Reuters is reporting up to $15 billion of his personal wealth has been confiscated. So the question is, there any clean officials? The answer is probably not. But the ones that are going down are the political enemies of the current administration. So as people may have seen the end of the movie Godfather, something similar to that was going on.
All right. That sounds exciting. We're going to keep track of that. Now, you have a post on the China Money Report called Slave Revolt in the Middle Kingdom. Tell us about the recent strikes, Dan.
Yeah, the people in the West may have trouble getting shoes. So some of these shoe factories here, especially in the South Dongguan province, they employ 30, 40, 50,000 people. The workers, after years of living through 10, 12-hour work days, you know, we all know the Foxconn scandals that happened last year, people jumping off the roofs. Nowadays, this recent strikes are spreading nationwide. People are demanding higher wage raises. So the good news for America is that Chinese wages are going up. At some point, they're going to be able to compete. The bad news for America is that at some point they're going to be able to compete on low-cost labor with China.
All right, so you've got suicides in the factories for a while. Remember, they had to put up those suicide nets. But it looks like the workers are getting higher wages, so the executives are committing suicide. So maybe the suicide is moving up the ranks to the kleptocrats at the top, and maybe not so many suicides for the wage workers at the bottom. I often think they should put up those suicide nets around these Wall Street banks down there, Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan. You know, try to, you know, that would be the humanitarian thing to do, you know, just to let them splat in the sidewalk. It's not very pretty, but then again, it does make for good TV. Now, many of the young middle class call themselves, this is very interesting, Dan, they call themselves male pubic hair, which is a euphemism for losers. An angry working class and a disenchanted middle class is often the recipe for revolution. What is the epistemological derivation of this phrase, male pubic hair? I don't know if you've heard it or not, but what is that all about, Dan?
Well, it's a recent slang term, probably not more than a year old. Diao-si, it also sounds like, the si sounds like death, so it also means you're called a pube, or it also relates that you're dead. So last year they were called ant tribe. They called themselves, we're the ant tribe, we're like worker ants, all we do is work. A lot of these guys, there's a lot of social disillusion, you know, people are disillusioned in China. You know, with the economic progress has also come increased hopes and ambitions. And even though a lot of these people are college educated, very smart, capable, speak English, they still work for very low wages, work very hard hours, and it leads to greater social disillusionment. Revolutionary speaking, you know, China's been anything but stable. The last 50, 60 years it has been stable, but, you know, who knows when that could change. You see riots daily in different Chinese cities over small issues of corruption are the biggest thing, and that's why you see the government cracking down on corruption.
All right, we've got about 10 seconds left, Dan. So on the revolution index, with 100 being the highest probability, what rate would you give it? We have about 10 seconds left.
In China, probably a 30.
A 30 out of 100 on the revolution index. That's Dan Collins, proprietary revolution index for China. Okay, Dan, thanks so much for being on the Kaiser Report.
Thanks, Max.
Well, that's a lot more information you're going to get from Rush Scumball or all those idiots, right-wing conservatives, and even a lot of the progressives. Some really hard stuff there. And if you're interested in the race, you've got to follow the money. You've got to follow the money. That's what most right-wingers don't understand. They don't see the connection. They don't understand the connection. But they better start understanding it, because there was some real heavy stuff on that show. Real heavy stuff. Well, that's it for today. Freya's Day, Friday. She-Wolf Day here in the bunker. I'll be back with you tomorrow, Saturday. I'm not sure what we're going to do tomorrow, but we'll be here. Saturn's Day. That'll be the 3rd of May, 2014. Remember, 14-5. Five words. I have nothing to say. Thank you, sir. Have a nice day. I have nothing to say. Or I'll call my lawyer. Later.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day. I've been terribly alone and forgotten in Manhattan. I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill, it calls to me. to be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. The morning fog may chill the air. I don't care, my love waits there. In San Francisco, above the blue and windy sea, when I come home to you, San Francisco, your golden sun.